Ohio football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown, and he throws an awesome block so his teammate can score instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you another chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scorer scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. Everyone knows the most exciting part of football is the score. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you have a chance to keep the fun going even after the first player crosses the goal line. Plus, you can enjoy second chance all season long. Place a first TD scorer wager today. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Make the right call for the right Medicare Advantage benefits. Go to MedMutual.com/review to schedule your free Medicare plan review with Medical Mutual, Ohio's hometown Medicare insurer.
Women to Watch is an intimate look into the lives of prominent and influential women leaders from around the world and the challenges they faced on their journey. It's the real story behind her title. Join us every week to hear more stories about women from around the world and in your own communities at womentowatch.net. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another week of Women to Watch. I'm Sue Rocco. Thanks so much for being with me. Joining me in just a moment will be Alexis Jones. And Alexis is an international speaker. She is an author. She is an activist. And she is the founder of Protect Her and I Am That Girl. Alexis is a really special person. You know, she portrays someone on the outside that has had tremendous success and confidence, toughness to appear on Survivor. But she shares with us in this interview some inner turmoil that she has experienced, particularly in becoming a new mother. So it's a really interesting conversation. Be sure to stay with us during the breaks where you'll hear from our watch team of corporate partners. And as always, please subscribe to our YouTube channel at W2W Media. So now I'm very honored and excited to welcome to the show Alexis Jones. Alexis Jones, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to be on here with you.
I'm thrilled to have you on. And I think I was going to give a quick shout out. I think we connected through Sarah Hirsch Bordeaux.
Am I right? Ma'am. Absolutely.
Yes, we did.
Yep.
She's due to come on for an update on the work she's doing, for women's health, which
That's
is pretty
amazing.
Fascinating.
She's doing such important work. She continues to tackle some of the biggest, most complicated issues, challenges facing women, and just continues to knock it out of the park. So she's doing really fascinating work around that right now.
Yeah, she is. So listen, I'm going to dive right in with you. And I wanted to start with something you said in another interview, and I loved it so much. And I think it really encompasses who you are. When you were 9 years old, you were practicing your acceptance speech to be president of the United States of America.
Gosh.
And your mom came in and found you doing that. And I thought, first of all, age nine, that's like that time, right? When, you know, we're coming out of innocence and we think everything is wonderful and then life steps in. And that was your level of confidence. So take me back to that, you know, that time. And I guess just tell me about what was really going on in your mind and with your aspirations.
Yeah, I think growing up in my family, there was so much emphasis on civic duty. That was a big thing in being of service. So I think we were always having a lot of conversations about how could we best serve the world and a lot of conversations about what are our gifts and talents. And it was always, you know, what's your treasure? You got to figure out what your treasure is so then you can share it with the world. And so I think from a really young age, because we were in those conversations and my grandfather was a judge in Texas and, you know, being in a place where I really felt like I could make a big difference. That for whatever reason, which is so funny, as soon as anyone says, like, I want to bring up something that you said once, I'm like, oh God, what did I say? But that was a really specific moment because, like you said, at that age, that naivete, you know, like you only see only possibility. You don't see any of the downside. You don't see any of the cost associated with something. And I think for me, I was just surrounded by so many people who were so inspiring, especially about being a little girl in Texas. And just always saying like, you can do anything, you know? So I was like, well, I mean, if I could do anything, obviously, when I'm president, and I just thought like, well, then, you know, I'll be able to make all this difference in the world. And I think that's always been really a through line in my career is like having any kind of platform, how can I leverage that platform to best serve whatever community?
So that's,
nine-year-old Lex had big aspirations.
Yeah. And that's a gift, I think, to have that kind of family support, to have that kind of messaging from parents. You know, a lot of kids don't always get that kind of aspirational advice, I'll say. Sure. And by the way, I think, were you the youngest and you have three brothers or four brothers?
I have four older brothers and I have a baby sister who's a stepsister who I had the grand luxury of basically inviting into my life. I prayed to God for like years and years and years that I would give up at least three of my brothers just to have one sister. So when my dad remarried, it was the greatest gift ever was I finally inherited a little sister. But I think that was also part of it actually was the context of growing up with so many big brothers and such a supportive father that I grew up in a very male dominated space. And all of those men expected me to speak up and expected me to have an opinion and expected me to, you know, like offer my opinions, but then also debate. And I think that was really helpful going into often, you know, business can so often be a male dominated space. And I think that that gave me a different confidence specifically in spaces that were very alpha male. I was like, oh, I got this. I grew up with four older brothers and my dad. Like, I just felt so comfortable in super alpha male spaces, which I think can be a bit of an anomaly for women.
Yeah. And they wanted to hear what you had to say.
Yep.
Right. So it was, they weren't kind of putting you in the background. I think that's, that's probably a huge difference for you.
Yeah, absolutely.
The community you grew up in, you've talked about, you know, the fact that it was a wealthy area, but your family in particular did not have the same means as all the kids you were going to school with. And, you said that that experience allowed you to learn more about your authentic self. And I thought that was really interesting that rather than feeling less than, it kind of allowed you to explore, well, that's going on out there. And here's where I come from. Who am I?
Sure. And also it, I think definitely gave me proximity to what was possible. I think that was something that was really important to me during that age was, but as you mentioned, and you said it so eloquently, I'm like, girl, we were broke. Like that's like the easy way to say it. Right. And you're like, I know you didn't have as much financial. And I'm like, you're so poetic. But yeah, growing up, you know, broke in a very affluent neighborhood. And I think I would be misleading to say that I didn't have insecurity about that. I think I absolutely had a chip on my shoulder about being the girl from the other side of the tracks, if you will. But I think finding my authentic self and authentic voice, was the alternative to kind of taking on this like performance-based facade, you know, like I knew exactly who I was. And I think that part of that was again, because I just had such an exceptional family. And, you know, I've said this in so many interviews, cause this is, you know, probably my life's mantra, but I always say maybe we didn't grow up with a lot of money, but we were billionaires in love. And I think we were having conversations, specifically one of my brothers. And I remember getting that lesson really young of like, listen, we don't have a lot of money. Like we don't have the same cars. We don't have the same shoes, the same clothes, the same opportunities. But you know, like what the treasure that we do have is greater than any treasure that exists. And I think holding on to that helped build an authentic foundation of like, I can go out into the world and I can, you know, jump off the biggest mountains in the world and know that I have this like beautiful, safe landing space that is my family. So I always say, I think that part of the authenticity of how I was made, how I was like really formed, was this idea of like chasing impossible dreams, because I always knew that I had this incredible safety net of just such radical love. And I think that has really been like probably the foundation, not probably, it has been the foundation of my life and my life's work.
Wow. I think it's funny. I'm kind of going rogue in this interview with you.
I love because it.
Typically I kind of go chronological, and there's so many topics I wanted to talk to you about because I just am interested in your take. And in the topic of trying to find out who we are and why we're here, which is one of the biggest, greatest questions, right? That I think can be very, very difficult for a lot of girls, just because of the way society is. And, you know, when Billie Eilish came out with her song, "What Was I Made For?" I remember hearing
that. Us all cry.
I cried. Just that one line. Yeah. I thought, oh my God, I spent so many years trying to figure that out. Yeah. And so when you start out that young with that kind of confidence and just excitement to explore the world and I can be what I want to be, would you say today you know exactly why you're here? Or do
Good question. It's such an interesting question because, as you know, being a new mother, I think that I'm like really in the midst of reinvention. And I think that reinvention kind of like your whole world gets turned upside down. And I hope that I get to reinvent myself more and more and more and more throughout life. I think that's the most interesting piece. But do I know why I'm here? I think that I continue to simplify my why. I think when I was a lot younger, I had a much more extensive, like, I am here because, you know, and even when I look back at like former interviews and it's like, I am here to empower women and I am here to empower women through the empowerment of men. It's like, you know, as my career has changed, like my language changes. But I think the longer that I'm alive, the more simple it becomes. And what feels very true to me today is that I'm here to love people. Literally that simple. And that feels so deeply honest to me. And I get to do it. And what I say now is I think I confuse the vehicle with like the why. Like the vehicle being like, is it through documentaries? Is it through public speaking? Is it through my writing and writing books? Is it through, you know? And I think I confuse like the how, I guess, meaning the vehicle, like how I do that thing. I think I confused with like the like truest form of my why. And so now I'm like, oh yeah, yeah, I can do all of those things. I can be a mom and I can work in the house and I can work outside of the house and I can write more books. And I'm like, I'm going to do all these things. But the reality is like every single one is just a vehicle, a medium, an opportunity for me to better love people. Like that's it. And that feels the most authentic for me.
Yeah. So it makes me think that maybe our why and why we're here is ultimately very simple. Mm-hmm. And it's all the things around that kind of distract us from or make us feel anxious about, am I doing everything to support my why? Yeah. And if you go back to that simple for you, it's to love people in such an authentic way. I mean, you just make people feel incredibly good about themselves. It kind of reminds me of something. So this is one of my favorite stories. And I'm just going to say, you said, I'm here to see Cecilia. So you wanted to try out for Survivor and you just took yourself to the LA studio and knocked on the door and, you know, made up a name. I love that story so much. And I thought I would ask you, you know, what other times have you done that where you just asked for what you wanted? Yeah. Perhaps you weren't ready. You didn't know what it was. You just, you know, went for it.
It's interesting. College game day. So at the time during in between undergrad and grad school, I'd hosted a TV show on the red carpet for 3 years. I was transitioning into sports, and college game day, a TV show on ESPN, was like the crown jewel of sports television for me. So I remember that they were coming to USC. I think it was a USC-UCLA matchup, or they were coming to one of our big games. And I found out where they were coming. And so I went to our head athletic director and I said, hey, listen, I know that you know, for this TV show, they really need a lot of students to come out. I was wondering if, you know, I could be someone who could rally the students. And I, like, in my head, I was like, I need to be a value add. Like, that's one of my big philosophies is like, never ask for something before you've offered value, like offer something before you ask for it. And that was like big way in which I was raised. And so I was like, you know, I want to be in charge of like bringing out all of the students, and I'll go and I'll rally all the sororities and I'll rally all the fraternities and all. And so I became this huge value add. And he said, okay, great. I'm going to put you in touch with the executive, you know, producer of the show, and you can help bring all the students out. And oh my God. I mean, I think at some point he was like, this is the most students we've ever had come out, you know, for the pregame. And I said, out of curiosity, like, where are you filming? And like, what time is, you know, everyone showing up? And so he tells me the location, and sure enough, because it was East Coast feed, I think call time was like 3:30 in the morning, like really, really like inappropriately early. And so sure enough, I got ready and I showed up and I was like there on set at 3:30 and I was sitting down at the table and the best part was it was all these guys who come walking in, including the main commentators, the producers, everyone sits at the table. I'm eating my breakfast food. No one asks me like, who is this girl? Like, and so finally they're all sitting down. We all start talking. I'm passing the milk. I'm passing the cereal. Oh yeah. You want some of this, you know? And then finally someone looks over and says, if you don't mind me asking, who are you? And I said, oh, I'm like,
what are you doing here?
Yeah, I work here. And they were like, what are you talking about? You work here. And I said, well, you know, I helped bring all of the students here. And I figured like, why not give me a shot? Like, this is my dream to work on this show. And I just remember him looking over in Kirk Herbstreit, who's a commentator. He was like, I mean, you got to like give her a shot. Like, who just shows up, and, you know, like eats all the food. And so that was kind of how I got my in with College Game Day. Was I was a big proponent of the worst thing that people can say is no. Oh no. The worst thing they were going to do is send me home at 3:30 in the morning. And I was going to go back to sleep. Fine. Yeah. Best case scenario. They were going to give me a shot, and they saw that I was willing to do what 99.99999% of people weren't willing to do, because that's ego, right? I mean, it could have been massive rejection and I would have been like, okay, busted. Yeah. I go home.
Well, when that happens, how do you respond to that? I'm sure there were times where you threw yourself out
totally.
It doesn't work out.
Oh yeah. I sulk and cry and walk away. And I'm like, well, I'll find another door. I'll find an entrance in the back. Yeah, I was just a big fan of ask forgiveness, not permission. And I think that audacity of Wayne Gretzky has this great quote, and it's like, you miss 99% of the shots that you never take. And I really live by that philosophy of like, okay, worst case. And I think because I throw myself in these pretty audacious circumstances that it's really worked out for me, because you set yourself apart. And I think that when you set yourself apart, people are like, oh, wow, that's different. Like this person really wants it, and they're really willing to go the extra mile, and or they're really willing to like put their pride on the line and you know, show up at the crack of dawn and be prepared to. And I just remember being like, I'm going to work really hard. Worst case scenario, you send me home, but just give me a shot. Like, give me one day, and if you don't think that, you know, I'm worth it, I think the other thing is also the, you know, opportunity and timing. What is it? There's like some amazing cheesy quote that's like, preparation and opportunity is like, there's no such thing as luck. You know, it's just like preparation and opportunity presents itself. And the other thing was that I had spent weeks, this is the other detail of that story, weeks memorizing statistics about the USC football team, so that when and if I got the opportunity, that I was going to be an encyclopedia for them on college football, specifically our university. And that was the other thing, was I knew that I was going to be a value add. I knew that I wasn't just coming in feeling entitled to an opportunity without doing the work, that once I got the opportunity, that they were going to be like, damn, like, this girl's no joke.
So you do like, some preparation. You did do some homework, preparation.
Yeah.
Someone on the show said once, and I don't know why it stuck with me, and it's all, they just said, if you don't ask, the answer is always no.
Sure.
So the way they said that, it just, yeah, right? It's always no if you don't ask. So why not give it a shot?
Yeah.
You know, when I read your bio and your background, it seems to me like you are in constant motion. You are someone that, you know, is in action, is in motion, is creating, is doing things. Are you restless? Or are you doing that because you're restless? Or
great question. Great question. Wow. I'm like, is this a therapy session? I should really think about that. Do I? I think if I'm being really honest, a lot of my early career was rooted in a fear of not being enough. So it was like, I have to perform. I have to do all these things. I have to hike not just a mountain, but like if I was going to hike a mountain, I had to go hike Everest, literally, right? And so for me, I think a lot of it was I wanted and felt like I was given so much opportunity that I wanted to like make the most of it. I think that shifted as I've gotten older and I've recognized that I don't necessarily energetically come from a place of not enoughness anymore. And a lot of that, I've just done so much like personal work on myself to really get to the root of that. And so now it feels like in a more authentic offering with less, I need to do this because I'm going to have a standing ovation and I'm going to, you know, be able to add this to my impressive bio. And I mean, there's a lot of that. And I wonder if that's just kind of youth that we're like, we're trying to like, we're strutting, you know, like my dad always says, like we're a bird that's out there strutting, trying to differentiate ourselves from the pack. And so I think a lot of that is just being young and being a hustler. But I think at this point in my
trying to prove ourselves. Yeah.
Totally
as opposed to just
trying to prove
it, it's enjoyable. Yep.
Yes. And I think I had to have a massive life transition, especially when COVID hit. And it was like, that was my entire career. I had at that point, 150 events on the calendar for 2020. And every single event was, you know, canceled within two calendar work weeks when COVID happened. And so that was a huge invitation for me to do the real work I'd probably been avoiding most of my life, which was, am I enough without all of the impressive, shiny things that people, you know, that you can read about me on Wikipedia? Like that had been so much of my life of, and I think that was really the little girl growing up in a wealthy neighborhood and being like, you just wait, you know, I'm going to go out there and I'm going to slay monsters and I'm going to, you know, do all of these amazing things and then I'm going to feel amazing. And I think that that moment for me within COVID was the opportunity to say, we are all inherently amazing. And it's not because of anything that we have done. It's not because of anything that we will do. And it was one thing for me to preach that from the stage. It was something else entirely for me for the first time in my life to actually believe that. So I think to answer your question,
yeah,
it's very different. And I think to answer your question, it wasn't necessarily a restlessness. It was a need to prove something in my early career. And now on the other side of that transition, I think especially as a mother has significantly slowed my life down. And I recognize I'm in a season that how I'm choosing to be present in motherhood. I don't have the capacity and the bandwidth to, you know, have 15-hour work days, 6 days a week.
Not only that, once you have that little life, does anything else really matter? Does anything have
the same level of significance? Yeah, I think I was not prepared. And that is the perfect word for it. I was not prepared for the level of significance that my son, who's 15 months old, has brought to my life. And I think honestly, that shift for me shocked me. I wasn't prepared for it at all. I thought I was going to have, you know, intellectually, especially before becoming a mom, I was like, oh, I'm going to have a baby. Not obviously. It took us years. And so much heartbreak to finally become parents. So it was something that was not easy for us. We'd work really, really, really hard at it. It was a very complicated journey for us. So I was so excited to be a mom. And I think that I was like, okay, I'm going to take my maternity leave and then I'm going to quote unquote go back to work. I had no idea what that even meant, right? But I was just like, oh, and then I'm going to like go back to my life. And I think the thing that surprised me was how much I wanted to be involved in their lives. And so it has shifted for this season of my life, how I defined myself and how I defined my perception of ambition. And I think that has been a grieving process for me to recognize that, like, whoa, this like version of me that existed before motherhood is changed and changing. And I think that is really, for me, it has been very hard and very scary to be like, I kind of don't recognize, because all the things I want have changed, and which means I'm changing, which is like, and I think I'm still in that becoming, this new version of me that's becoming, I'm still in that process. And I think I've had to give myself a lot of grace through that process, because pre-children, I was very clear about who I was, and I was very defined by my career. And I just thought that would always be the case. And my career is important to me. The work that I do is important to me. And my son is paramount. And that surprised me.
Yeah, that's really interesting. You use that word grieving about a former life. We're going to go into a break. When we come back, I want to talk about that. I think that's a really interesting topic. Stay with us as we go into our first break, and you'll hear from Christy McCaffrey for our good news segment and Dawn Zier on leadership. We'll be right back with Alexis Jones.
Hi, I'm Christy McCaffrey, founder and owner of Be The Good Media, and I'm here to share some good news with you. Today, I wanted to share with you about a guest I recently had on my podcast named Marianne Frey. Marianne is the CEO of an organization called Maternity Care Coalition. This organization has been around for 42 years, and they primarily serve pregnant and postpartum women and parenting families who are facing social and racial inequities. What really inspired me about my conversation with Marianne was just how she explained that her own personal challenges in her life, she feels have really helped her to better show up for this underserved community that she works with. You can hear more of my conversation with Marianne at BeTheGoodMedia.com. And there you'll also learn more about how Be The Good Media helps to amplify impact-driven missions and causes. Again, I'm Christy McCaffrey. Listen here for more good news on Women to Watch.
Hi, I'm Dawn Zier, and I'm thrilled to be back as a Watch Team contributor to share leadership advice for aspiring women to help them advance in their careers. It's hard to believe that it's been 5 years since I was last on the show as the CEO of Nutrisystem with my weekly segment on career advice. So what have I been up to? I've been watching and learning. Since we sold Nutrisystem, I've been sitting on several public and private company boards, doing speaking engagements, and have become a trusted advisor to Fortune 500 senior executives through my work with the Exco Group, a firm of experienced CEOs, board directors, and global business leaders who offer real-world experience to help organizations and senior executives unlock their full leadership potential. As someone who likes to connect the dots across industries, I found that powerful leadership does not live in silos. There are learnings everywhere. Some of the topics we'll explore in future episodes are leading with intention, being in the driver's seat of your own career, building your personal brand, dealing with workplace aggression, how to have those tough conversations, and my personal fave, lead, follow, or pass. I have two quick tips for female leaders before I close. Be a hand raiser and don't overthink things. Do not spend a lot of time contemplating whether you're qualified or good enough when an opportunity arises. Push that door open and walk right through. If you hesitate for too long, somebody else will take your seat. I have found in general that guys are much less likely to overthink and be self-critical. Please follow me on LinkedIn at Dawn Zier. And if you're a senior executive looking to grow in your career, visit excoleadership.com to learn more.
Welcome back to the show. I'm joined this week by Alexis Jones. And in the first segment, you know, we left it talking about what happens to us when we become moms. It's such an enormous change in our life. And I had never heard someone describe the grieving of the former self before. So, and I'm sure a lot of our listeners related to that. When did you first recognize that is my first question.
Yeah, I would never have planned it this way, but I had a book coming out in June And my son, and we had that on the calendar, how pub dates work. I mean, it was two and a half years in advance. We put that on the calendar. We had been trying to get pregnant for so many years. So we kind of had no idea when that was going to happen. And then it turned out getting pregnant at basically, I gave birth. And then like 90 days later, my book launched. And so I was in this whirlwind, and I had a very complicated pregnancy towards the end, a very complicated birth. My son was in the NICU for several weeks. He came home on oxygen. So the buildup to one of the biggest professional moments of one of the most, you know, biggest professional debuts of my life was a very complicated one. And so I felt like for those first 3 months, all I wanted to do was like be in this cocoon with my son, but I was having to do all these interviews and I was having, you know, and I'm like, I feel like we're not, as women, like super transparent. And I mean, I was like basically still in stitches with like ice on my C-section scar, but like waist up, I was like camera ready. And you know, and meanwhile, wow, like I'm looking down, making sure that like my boobs aren't leaking. I mean, it was such a complicated moment of identity for me. And I felt like when I was with my son, all I was thinking about were the endless to-do lists, because I had an entire team who had worked so hard for 2.5 years to put this book out into the world that I owed them so much. So when I was with my son, I was like, oh my God, I have to do this interview and I have to do this post and I have to, when I was working, you know, when I was doing interviews and writing op-eds and all I was thinking about, like, you know, I'd like was crying because all I wanted to do was like be with my son. And so I think the grieving process began there, that like all of a sudden I had never experienced a complete bifurcation of who I was. And all of a sudden I was so, the best word I can describe for me postpartum is I was so confused. I was confused about how I felt. I was confused about how I thought I should feel.
Were you scared?
Totally. I was terrified.
Yeah.
I was like,
yeah,
is my career over? You know, so I had moments where I felt like I was missing out because I was having to say no to all these speaking engagements because I couldn't travel and my son was too small and, you know, he, his lungs were compromised. And so, you know, I'm looking at social media of a lot of my professional peers, like going to these big summits. And normally I was the one keynoting those summits and I'm like at home and, you know, trying to, you know, keep a tiny human alive. And then in the same breath, I'm having thoughts of like, none of that stuff matters at all. Like in one breath, that was like, I was grieving that I wanted to be there. And then I was having massive FOMO that I wasn't at all these really cool events that I was accustomed to being at. And then 2 seconds later, I would like look at my son and I'd be like, nobody exists outside of him. You know, like he was my whole world.
It's a massive blurry of emotion. Oh my gosh.
It was like a total mind F. I was just like, I don't know who I am. I don't know how I feel. And the emotional roller coaster was so intense for me. So those first few months, like totally rocked my world. I'd never had that kind of physical limitation before, just like the inability to get on a plane. Because my son came home on oxygen, we had like a 6-foot radius of where we could take him. And so literally my world that I was this, like in my brain, right? My ego is like, I'm this international like speaker who travels all over the world. And suddenly I was existing within a 6-foot radius. And that felt so trapping, you know, that I had spent, quite frankly, 40 years, you know, I had him when I was 40. I'd spent 40 years doing whatever I wanted to do and having this being defined by this big, very public career. And all of a sudden, I was this utterly vulnerable, like literally torn in half, new mom who didn't know who she was, or I feel like I didn't know up from down. And I feel like I haven't heard enough stories about women chasing really, really big, impossible dreams, talking about what the transition was like into motherhood and how they have the version of them that exists on the other side of that. So I'm just trying to be like really transparent, like with what my journey was. And so those first 3 to 6 months was the most confrontational 3 to 6 months of my entire life of like, well, who am I? Like, if I'm not up on the biggest stages in the world, who am I? And that's when I was like, you know what? That's when I got crystal clear. My only job is to love people. And the only person I need to love right now is the tiny little person in my arms. And that is enough for right now.
Right. And by the way, you're expecting number two, if our listeners don't know. So that'll, but my guess is you'll feel much more prepared. The second time around, we know what to expect. So there's less of the fear of the unknown, right? It takes a little bit of that edge off.
I hope so.
Yeah.
We'll see.
I promise.
We have another boy. So we're going to be a two-boy household.
Oh my God. Well, you're used to that, right? You're used to being around the boys.
Exactly. I'm like, listen, I'm thrilled to be a mom. I swear I would have like mothered a chinchilla. I didn't care at that point. But the fact that we get to have two boys is the greatest privilege of my life is going to be being their mom.
It'll be awesome. Speaking of boys, one of the things I wanted to talk to you about, let me see if I can find that question. There's a lot of talk about women's empowerment, right? And I almost sometimes feel like that word is getting overplayed.
Ohio football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown, and he throws an awesome block so his teammate can score instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you another chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scorer scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. Everyone knows the most exciting part of football is the score. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you have a chance to keep the fun going even after the first player crosses the goal line. Plus, you can enjoy second chance all season long. Place a first TD scorer wager today. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly, but then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Save big money on your next outdoor project at Menards. Menards has the best in-stock selection of AC2 pressure-treated lumber. Our huge inventory of decking, fencing, lumber, and timbers are all easy to load in our drive-thru lumber yard. Plus, you can get free estimates fast with our fence and deck design programs in-store or online at Menards.com. Don't forget to check out our weekly flyer for all the great deals happening now. Save big money at
Menards. We need to find another word. I don't want to say empowerment anymore. But do you think we're neglecting the boys and the men in all of this effort to really help build the self-esteem of young girls and help women find their voice? Where do men fit into that?
Yeah.
And you just tell me your thoughts.
No, I think when I first started I Am That Girl, which was a community dedicated to supporting really college-aged women, we were always being asked, like, what's the guy's version? Like, when are you going to, you know? And at the time, I was like, I'm busy. You know, like, I'm working on the girls, like, at some point. And when I ended up creating the program Protect Her to work with young men, I think that was a very, very intimate, behind closed doors. And I was working predominantly at Division I athletic programs with male athletes. I think that was when I got to see behind the velvet curtain of just how insecure, just as insecure young men were as women. And that they didn't feel, what was shared with me was that they didn't feel like they necessarily had cultural permission to talk about their fears, their insecurities, their doubts, the way that we were having these like safe spaces for girls to come. So I think that a lot of it is with the Me Too movement a very necessary pivotal moment in time in which I think so many women finally felt comfortable and safe to come forward and to share their experiences. And I think that when we kind of removed that script, right, for men of like, no, you can't say that anymore. No, you can't do that anymore. No, which like, good, all of that is appropriate. There are so many things that have been said and been done and have, you know, gotten swept under the rug forever. So again, like a very important cultural moment of shifting. But I think it's back to the whole idea, like when we shift, when we change, there's a transition required. And that transition requires a lot of grace. And I feel like in that movement, because I spent 5 years working predominantly with men and listening to their experiences, that there was like this new, like, you can't read from that script anymore. And they're like, okay, well, what's the new script? Like, what can we say? What can we do? What can we, you know? And so I do think there was a lot of confusion for them, because I think that's what change evokes. It evokes this like, whoa, I used to do it this way, but I can't do it. So what is the new way? And I think that, yeah, a lot of the men, you know, shared with me that they kind of needed the same circles that we as women have been sitting in forever, validating and supporting. And, I certainly think about that.
Yeah, they have places. So they go, you know, whatever they're doing together as men, but I guess, you know, women get together and we're all talking about our feelings and our fears and all of that. And men get together. This, I'm painting a big broad brush, but I have brothers only, you know, they're talking about sports and they're talking about kind of the superficial stuff, you know, they're not diving deep into each other's inner thoughts. Yeah. And that can be a scary place because you feel that you're alone.
Yeah.
And I feel if there was a place for men to do that as well, that's why I loved that program that you developed for men. We could use more of those so that they then there would be an easier connection, I think, between men and women ultimately together. Yeah.
I think that we make a lot of assumptions that women are emotional creatures and that men are not. And I think that human beings are emotional creatures.
I agree.
And the way that we have programming that I think supports us, I think we equally as women have programming that's very detrimental to us, especially when we are taught to view ourselves ornamentally, when we are taught to objectify ourselves. You know, we live in a culture that sexually objectifies us. And like, before you know it, we can start doing it to ourselves. And I think the same thing for men, and I think these are all myths that, you know, we kind of get spoon fed when we're young. And then it takes a lot of deprogramming that, and even within girl, women culture is like, actually the truth is collaboration over competition, right? But we're taught, we absorb such a scarcity model. Well, there's only two women at the top. And if I'm going to be one of those two women, it means all these women are my competition. And at the same time, I think one of the myths for especially young boys is like we kind of like numb their emotions. We tell them like, oh, you're not going to cry. We treat them differently. And one of the things that we talk about with Bridger, our son, even at 15 months, is like every time he trips or he falls or he bonks his head or something happens. And my husband had the blower outside. He was like blowing leaves. And when he turned it on, like my son just looked at me and was like, ah! Like clearly it just like terrified me. Like
that's a terrifying noise if you're little.
When you're like a tiny little person. And we are both, my husband and I, are really adamant about always validating and naming what the emotion is for him. Because we're like, can you imagine if we raise two young men who honor and know how to feel their emotions, one, and two, can name their emotion? Like, God help. But, you know, I mean, a lot of women I know don't know how, you know, never learned emotional IQ. And here in Montana, where we live, my husband's a part of a men's group. And I think that it's one of the best things he's ever done in his whole life. And he grew up as a professional athlete. So he grew up around the alpha of alpha men, was always in locker rooms, always had guy friends. I mean, he's like such a guy's guy. But when we moved to Montana, it was the first time he ever joined the men's group. And he comes home, you know, every week, like in tears. And it's just so beautiful to see a space where, you know, like a 6'9", like alpha dude can say, the things, like the vulnerable things, you know, and to say like, yeah, fatherhood is hard and I'm trying to figure out how to balance like being a dad and working and I'm, and that he is a space where other men are like, I totally get that. Like, that's so hard. I'm so sorry. And Brad was like, I didn't know that like men, like we could come together, you know, and, yeah. And be and it's this not honest. About,
yeah. It's not about not being strong. Right. So, I mean, I think that it's the opposite.
Yeah, when exactly.
You embrace your humanity, you are stronger. And that's kind of the missed message that I think boys get.
Especially, I couldn't agree more. And I think if anything, my husband has reframed that vulnerability is strength. And I think he grew up thinking vulnerability was weakness. Mm-hmm. And so now he's like, I don't even have guy friends who can't like talk about their feelings and emotions. He was like, because those are the only guys I want to be around. You know, he was like, I just want real friendships. You know, he was like, I don't even know how to do the superficial. But yeah, I think, gosh, if all men had the opportunity to be told that their emotions are valid and to help navigate them and to talk about especially fears and insecurities, I think that's a big piece. And for Brad to be able to go into a space and say, this is, you know, I'm feeling insecure about this, and have other men be like, I totally get it. Because again, it's not a female thing. It's not a male thing. It's a human thing to have insecurities. We all have them. It is like the glue that holds our humanity together, that no matter what, we can relate to someone because we all know that we have these like echoing fears inside of us. And so for him to be able to go into a space and honestly, what he says is like, it's so nice to go into space and be able to tell the truth. I don't have to like put on this front. I don't have to pretend like I figured everything out. And I think even his sheer size, like being 6'9", being like a former professional athlete, I think a lot of that comes with the trappings of kind of this facade of like, I don't know, being a tough guy. And Brad is like the sweetest, like teddy bear on the inside. And so it's funny because now that he's been in men's group, it's shocking how many of his guy friends who aren't in his men's group, come to him now and ask advice and are like, I'm having a hard time in my marriage. And he's like, let's talk about
it. That's so great.
Now he's like, I kind of feel like I've become this like guy that like other guy. And I'm like, yeah, babe, because like you're being vulnerable. And then other guys are like, oh, we don't have to do the dance. We don't have to pretend that we're fine, you know? And we're like, none of us are fine. We're all like trying to, we're all like trying to figure it out, you know? And so Brad's like, it's just nice that like, I give other guys permission to tell the truth.
Yeah.
Like, beautiful.
It is. It is beautiful. And I think we've come a long way. If we look at the world today, just you and I talking about this openly here on this, you know, platform, compared to, I mean, I'm older than you, but growing up in the 70s, nothing was discussed. It was all secretive,
absolutely,
you know, on the surface. I wanted to ask, you had said influence and fame are just a tool to go after what you truly care about. And I wonder how you reconcile, you know, it's no secret that in the arena of Hollywood and fame and media, there is a lot of superficial happenings, right? So how do you reconcile that? Because that's not who you are. You're very transparent with utilizing it as a tool to be able to spread your message.
Yeah. I think for me, it's always been a byproduct. And I think removing it as the end goal shifted for me, like opened up the possibility of, okay, if I continue to stay true to who I am, if I continue to work on projects that I'm passionate about, if I continue to speak my truth into the world, what I found is that notoriety, success, awards, fame to some degree, whatever that even means, right? However we quantify that. Have been byproducts of that. And so I think that that is a big shift because I know at a certain point, some statistic came out recently, and especially with social media, and they asked a bunch of young women, like, what do you want to be when you grow up? And like the most stated response was famous. And you're like, oh no, fame isn't the point. It's a byproduct of being like the very best at what you do. And I think growing up
in value. I'm sorry. It has no value. Fame has no value. It happens if you become well known, if you're notable, right?
Sure. And I think obviously living in LA for a decade, I just had, and especially hosting a TV show where it was my job to interview the most famous people in the country. And what I learned very quickly was fame was not commensurate to happiness and joy and contentment and fulfillment even. And that a lot of the very, very notable names and faces were some of the saddest people that I had met. And so I think, and I, you know, I started that job when I was 19. And so I think I had a really, again, kind of like proximity to the reality, not what we see in magazines, not what we see in TV, not what we see on social media, but meeting the people, spending time with them, getting to know them, being like, oh, wow. If anything, I think fame has an enormous cost. And most people don't talk about the cost of lack of anonymity. And what you're giving up for fame, for money, for, you know, and I think that a lot of the people who've achieved that and gotten to the top of that mountain have the same realization that I had of a decade of witnessing that super intimately of like, oh God, that's not the goal. But the people that I saw who were the most content, who were the most fulfilled, understood, and I think taught me that, listen, fame is a flashlight. And it means that like I get to put that light on the things that matter most. And I think Kristen Bell is a perfect example. I met her years ago and she became a very dear friend. And I think that she really understood. She was and is an incredible actor. And she recognizes that her platform has impact. And she would always say, listen, I'm an actor. Like that's my job. The byproduct of my job is that I have this huge social media following. I have, you know, I'm a face on magazines, I'm all of those things, but what can I do to leverage, you know, my influence, my fame, really to like highlight and put that flashlight on things that matter. And I think there's almost no one who does that better than her. That she's very crystal clear about putting the emphasis on activists and on issues that are, that she is personally passionate about. And she is one of the most genuinely like content. Like she's a very, like the way that she balances and prioritizes her relationship with Dax, the way that she balances and prioritizes her children, watching her navigate. She is one of those women that for me, as someone I admire professionally, but also someone that I know personally, I think really showcased the power of influence. And when you use it strategically, that you can make a difference. And I think that is a path to fulfillment. That I think fame and money in itself, oh gosh, the people that I know that just chase that, and worse, who got it, and all of the things that they gave up, and all of the people that they stepped on, and all of the bridges that they burned. Oh my gosh, is that a hollow promise? So yes. I was really clear, like that is not the point. That is like, if anything, like I said, I think the cost is really hefty. The burden is hefty. And I still think that there is a way to, of course, as you mentioned, be strategic with leveraging any form of power, whether that comes in the form of beauty, whether that comes in the form of financial resources, whether that comes in the form of strategic, powerful relationships, but anyone who's leveraging power, I think to like better serve other people, that's the only reason for it.
Yeah. That's so nice to hear about Kristen Bell. I do not know her personally, but I've always looked at her that way. And also her sense of humor, you know, it just comes across that she's genuine, and anybody that funny, you know, is usually
the funniest girl I've ever met. And I mean, I feel like people get snippets of it, but like, oh my gosh. Yeah. She is one of the most like authentically funny, witty, inappropriate people I've ever met. And it's my favorite sense of humor. First time I met her, I was like, oh, we're going to be friends. Like, you're my people. Yeah, she's a very, very special human being.
That's so nice to hear. Well, just tell me, I could talk to you all day long. I want to know what you're working on right now. What are you most excited about? Is there a project that you're working on or something on the horizon outside of the little project in your belly?
Yeah, I mean, the truth is, I think for the first time in my life, I've gotten really comfortable saying, I don't know. I don't know what is in store. I know that I have a very busy 15-month-old, and I have another baby boy due in, gosh, I mean, we're on like the ticking, you know, we're looking at like the window. My husband, we're also very inappropriate with our sense of humor. And we're always like, doomsday, T-minus 5.5 months. As we like go back into the hole of sleep deprivation with a newborn. But yeah, for the first time in my life, and again, I think this is, I don't even know if it's maturation of just like we get older and we recognize like more how the world works. But I think I have a different level of faith around what is meant for me cannot pass me by. And I think part of my youth was like, I was chasing that all the time. You know, I was like, ooh, I want that opportunity. Ooh, I want that. And for the first time, and I think part of it also is I've worked really hard in my career, and it feels really good to be at a place where for the first time, I'm not having to make like outgoing phone calls for things. And so it's really nice to say like, I have earned the right to sit back and to answer the phone. And when incredible projects come across my path, I will say motherhood has definitely given me a very, very good filter for like, it's either an F yes, or it's a no. Because anything that takes me away from my son has to be an absolute yes without any hesitation. And I've started using that filter when people are like, oh, I'm working on this new thing. Do you want to be involved? And I'm thinking about this. Do you want to host this? And do you know? And I'm like, if I have any hesitation, I'm like, thank you so much. I'm so honored for, you know, the opportunity. But unfortunately, no. So I'm getting to be very persnickety with what I say yes to, which feels really, really good. And also prioritizing like my physical.
Isn't that such a calming place to be?
Yes.
Not have that, right? That I love what you said, you know, the opportunities, they're going to come.
Yeah.
You can sit back now and just wait for what's meant for you to show up.
Yeah. There were so many things that I was like, oh man, I really wanted that. Like they asked who to host it. Oh, I wanted to host. And that philosophy of what's meant for you cannot pass you by. That has changed. I mean, that changed my life. I mean, even if it was like, we put an offer on a house before we got our house, we'd put 5 offers on houses and we didn't get any of them. And I was so devastated every time. And finally, that was about the time that that mantra came into my life. Like what's meant for me cannot pass me by. So when we found the house that we're in right now, I was like, thank God those 5 houses didn't work out, you know?
Yeah. They weren't meant for you.
They weren't meant for me. And I feel that way professionally that, I am still, like I said, in a huge, I mean, I just had my first human 15 months ago and I'm about to have my second, and, you know, we did them very back to back because we didn't think it would take us this long to do it. But that's another thing is that for the first time in my life, I'm really prioritizing even my like energetic bandwidth, like what I know I have capacity for, while still being present, because it takes a lot to get me on a plane these days. It takes a lot for me to spend like a night away from my son.
Well, travel
so it
today.
Has to be.
Oh, it's so stressful. I mean, you know, is my plane going to be canceled? I don't know. It could be, it might not be. It's really hard.
Yeah, it is.
I'm going to ask, I don't want to keep you too long because I know you have a little one to get back to. I think the last question I'll ask you is just knowing, you know, the audience that is listening, and it's predominantly women. And I think a lot of them are tuning in for inspiration, and they perhaps haven't found their, you know, what was I made for?
Yeah.
What do you think, what are the questions that they could ask of themselves to find that, to get closer to it?
I love that. Here's the thing, and this may be like kind of getting out of answering your question directly, but I think what I found recently is we put so much emphasis, I know I did on myself, I put so much emphasis on quote unquote figuring out my life. And like, I have to put together a game plan, and what are my hopes and dreams, and what is my passion? And I wanted all these things to be very fixed answers to questions. And I think what I'm continuing to learn right now is for me, it's more powerful to sit in silence and like ask the, what I refer to as like the unseen. So if that's God, if that's the universe, if that's, you know, I don't know, like gnomies and like unicorns, like whatever someone feels comfortable. But like, I think sitting in silence intentionally. I mean, like putting your phone away, turning the music off, turning all the screens off. I do this as a form of journaling every morning, which has been a really powerful practice. But like, I ask the unseen world, like, how can I best serve today? Because I think sometimes we put this weird pressure to be like, what's my passion? I have to figure it out and like do that thing for a living and get like paid to do that, as opposed to how can I best serve today? And what if today the best way that you show up is literally like talking to the person in the Starbucks line and like affirming them? And that like for today, that was the best use, like you were of service, like that was your purpose today. You know, and I think that that takes the pressure off of like figuring anything out. So I think that for me, that's like the best advice is like to ask yourself, how can I best serve today? And then like opening your eyes and being super present for opportunities to like love people. I mean, I honestly think we kind of all have the same purpose. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, I think all of our purpose,
I think it's all that simple.
I really do. Yeah. I think it's like to love and be loved. Like, it's the only purpose for every human. And then we get to do it in different ways. But again, like the way, the hows actually don't really matter. Some people do it through this, some people do it through that. But I think the idea that like, sometimes, you know, a girlfriend calls and she's having a really crummy day and I take 20 minutes to just like love on her. And in my brain, I'm like, today, check, did it. Yeah. That was my purpose today, was loving on her today. That was it, you know? And so it takes the pressure off of like, I'm building an empire, you know, which is like, by the way, awesome. Build an empire. Amazing. Thinks, you know what
honestly,
I mean?
Yeah, everybody thinks like, they have to build an empire.
Do it. Awesome. Yeah. Like, does it that, like, I don't know. It's just like what I'm realizing now. And I think bringing it full circle, like my 9-year-old self was like, when I become president, when I build an empire, you know, it's enormous. And now I'm like, you know, if I always say it's for the one, like every day it's just for the one. It's not, you know, and sometimes I have the luxury of speaking to like 25 women. Sometimes I speak to 10,000 women in like a stadium. Like I don't, it always varies. And I always say it's always for the one. And even when I post on social media, I'm like, it's always for the one. There's one human being who's going to read that post, who is going to come across something, who's going to, even when I wrote my book, I was like, it's for the one. There's one person out there that that message was for. And that is enough for me. And I think that with that, with those expectations, but 9-year-old Lex was like, I am going to change the world. And now I'm like, I just want to like love the guy at the gas station today. Like, that's enough. That's enough for me.
Yeah, and when you do that, I think when if that's the only pressure you put on yourself, by the way, I am very unusual. I have never like written goals. I don't create strategy. I don't know how to do, my brain doesn't work that way. I'm just always kind of in the moment. But if you do that one simple thing, all these opportunities show up. It really is simpler than I think the society is telling. Especially women.
Especially women. You know, we put so much pressure on ourselves. So like when you say like, what advice would you, I'm like, the advice I would give to any woman listening to this is like, take a nap. Like you need it. We all like, what take do you really nap. Need? You don't need to figure out your life. You don't need to figure out what you're passionate about. You don't need like, girl, take a nap. Cause we tired, you know? Yeah. And I'm like, and the whole idea of like, we can't give what we don't have. You know, so it's like, if we don't take the time to figure out how to radically love ourselves, we don't have that to offer people. And I think that that is the greatest treasure we will ever offer anyone, is having the audacity to first love ourselves, especially in a society that convinces us every day that we're not enough. Like the most radical, rebellious thing a woman can do is to love herself. And so if you start there, again, like the byproduct of that is like your cup is so full, it is literally overflowing to people all around you. And then you get to be a day maker. You get to walk into the gas station. You get to walk into Starbucks. You get to, you know, like do these things in the world that bless other people. But yeah, I think the idea that we put so much, and I know I did for a decade and a half, I was the girl like vision boards and goals and, you know, I would check in like measurabilities. Oh God. Like it's horrifying to look back at my notebooks, you know, and it's like, if I'm not president by this year, I have failed.
I failed as a human being.
Totally.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
It's ridiculous. And I think that, like, as women, you know, because we can quote unquote have it all, we should have it all at the same time. And I'm like, I don't know about anyone else, but like, I just want to be so honest about how exhausting that is.
Yeah. Well, you know what's ironic, Alexis? What I see in women that really are not caring for themselves, it is because they think that they're here to serve.
Yeah.
So if you're here, you use the word service, and I think they confuse that with, I'm here to serve others at the detriment of my own well-being.
Yeah, of course.
It's not.
That is the message women get. And I talk about that in my book, Joy Hunter, that so much of my programming was making other people feel comfortable at the expense of myself.
Yes.
And showing up for people everything was at the expense of myself. My activist work was at the expense of myself because I was so touted and rewarded for like being such a good woman. Cause I was like living by the standards of like, I'm tired, especially in motherhood. You're like, I'm tired. It's like, but I got even less sleep. Like we're wearing it as this like badge. And I'm like, I don't do that anymore. I ain't busy. I'm napping. Like I'm proud to be like, I nap whenever I can. But I think that's very accurate of, you know, because of that messaging, that's why I think it's so rebellious to say like, that's actually not true. One, it's not true. And it's two, not. If I'm really going to be effective, and I think that's one of the things when I work, especially with like high achieving entrepreneurs and C-suite executives, and especially if it's a female audience, I'm like, listen, like nobody needs a message to lean in as a woman. We are planking on a regular basis. The message we need is to lean back, take a nap, and maybe get a snack down
or out of the plank.
Exactly. Yeah. So I think that's definitely, you know, if there's any message, it's not like figure out your life. It's like, get really quiet and love yourself. Like if that is your only mantra, which like sounds so woo woo, but it's like every morning, like my mantra before I get out of bed is like, if I can say it 100 times in a row with my eyes closed before I get out of bed, I'm like, I love you. 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 I love you.
Oh, that's beautiful.
I got to fill up my tank.
Beautiful.
You know? And so like, if I can start my day from that place of like, I love you. I see you. You're enough. You have enough. You do enough. Like, I don't know. That's kind of, I think the start of like, then I get to offer that to everyone around me.
Yeah, that's beautiful. I love that. And you're so right. And I agree with you on so many levels. Listen, I'm so grateful that you took time to be on the show and share a little bit of your story. I love talking to you. And I wish you so many blessings with the new arrival. And we'll be sharing your work, whatever comes next.
Thank you so much.
We're going to go into our last break now, and you'll hear from AJ Bishop with her Wealth Watch. I'll be right back.
Hey, I'm AJ Bishop Andrews, and I'm thrilled to be joining you as a new contributor to this incredible podcast. As the CEO and founder of The 9 to Thrive, I'm passionate about helping women achieve financial security and empowerment, especially when it comes to making bold career moves. I've met so many talented women who dream of leaving their corporate jobs to pursue their calling, but they're held back by the fear of losing their financial stability. I get it because I've been there. I know how it feels to be stuck in a career that no longer aligns with your values, but to worry about how you'll pay the bills if you make a change. But here's what I've discovered. When you have a solid financial plan in place, when you know exactly where your income is coming from and how you'll cover your expenses, the fear starts to lose its power. And that's what we do at The 9 to Thrive. We give women the tools and strategies they need to create a financial roadmap and exit strategy that supports their dreams. When you have that kind of financial clarity and confidence, you're free to make choices that truly light you up inside. I believe women are meant for bigger things and want a life that aligns with their deepest values and aspirations. Because ultimately, this journey is about so much more than money. It's about claiming your power, your purpose, and your potential. It's about creating a life that's truly worth living. To learn more about the 9 to Thrive pathway and our growing community, you can find us on LinkedIn or visit my website at ajbishop.co. Here's to your financial freedom and living a life that truly sets your soul on fire.
We are CHOP, and we can't wait to show you around. We're the nation's first children's hospital. Now, a care network with more than 50 locations that continues to expand. Three state-of-the-art research buildings with 1.5 million square feet of space. We have grown from 12 beds 165 years ago to nearly 600 beds and one of the best children's hospitals in the world. We have a level one trauma center, 11 floors of patient units, more than 20 operating rooms, first-of-its-kind delivery unit for babies with birth defects, a separate cardiac operative and catheterization suite, and places to learn, like our internationally recognized simulation center. We have trained generations of leaders in the field of pediatrics. We are world leaders in medicine, surgery, and science. One of the top recipients in NIH funding for pediatric research. In this building, pioneers in CAR T therapy, mitochondrial disease, brain tumors, hyperinsulinism, and other rare diseases. Here, groundbreaking work in fetal surgery, genetics and genomics, and neurology. In our newest building, leaders in social determinants of health, clinical informatics and epidemiology, autism, trauma and injury prevention. Our patients come from every state and 115 countries. Meeting these challenges requires the best and the brightest. We are passionate about pediatrics. We are motivated to make a difference in the world and in our community. We are a team. We are CHOP.
That's it, everyone, for another week of Women to Watch. Thanks so much for being with me. Next week, I'm going to be speaking with Sarah Hirsch Bordeaux. And Sarah is a famous filmmaker, and she's working on a very important project right now around women's health. Thanks, as always, to our sponsors and advertisers, and I hope you have a great week.
Ohio football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown, and he throws an awesome block so his teammate can score instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you another chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scorer scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. Everyone knows the most exciting part of football is the score. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you have a chance to keep the fun going even after the first player crosses the goal line. Plus, you can enjoy second chance all season long. Place a first TD scorer wager today. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
People are driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. The hiring process can be slow and overwhelming. Simplify hiring with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. That's Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Terms and conditions apply.